And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening live at Joy 620 or you're listening to the podcast over at investinghope.com or on Google Play or iTunes, wherever podcasts are found, you can find this show. We're certainly grateful that you're tagging along with us each and every week as we talk about life and the issue of abortion and what that's doing to the country. And the last few weeks, to be honest, I guess we've talked a lot about COVID-19, the coronavirus, and what's going on around the world. If you are local and in the state of Tennessee, things are starting to open back up next week. Next week, you can go to a restaurant, and that restaurant has to keep it at 50% capacity, so it won't be a full restaurant. But at least we can start to slowly see things opening back up and start to see a light at the end of the tunnel. And so we're thankful for that. We're thankful that it appears that we have, in fact, flattened the curve. One thing to remember about the whole point of flattening the curve was to flatten the curve. It wasn't to end the virus. And so some folks are acting as if, well, we can't open up back up society until the virus is gone. Well, if that's the mindset, then hunker down because we'll never open up society again. But the reality is our goal was to flatten the curve and simply spread out the infection or herd. Is you take a place like Vermont, they get over 100 inches of snow a year, okay? They're prepared to get 100 inches of snow per year. Are they prepared to get all of that this weekend? Well, no. No, of course they're not. If a snowstorm hit Tennessee and we got all of our expected snowfall in one weekend, we would not be prepared for that. So what this virus has done, in effect, instead of saying, okay, where our hospitals, our emergency rooms, our clinics, our beds, our ICU units, our ventilators, all of that, we're prepared for a year. Instead, what we found was COVID-19 came on the scene, and we began to look and wonder if we were prepared because it seemed to be the infection rate was so high. Now, what we've seen is data has come out and articles have been written and press conferences have been had. And now we're starting to hear from physicians that are actually doing the work every single day. We're starting to see that, you know, maybe it's been here longer than we thought it was. Maybe the virus was here back before the first of the year. Maybe it was here in 2019. They're doing studies now out of prisons where the bulk of the population of a prison tested positive, but 92% of those that tested positive had no symptoms. So what's that mean? Well, if you extrapolate the data and you look across the board, that means there's a really good chance that a lot of folks have had it. And I know you've met that friend, or maybe you are that friend that says, well, I think I had a cough back in January, and I'm pretty certain I had the COVID-19. I don't know if you did or not, but there's a really good chance that a lot more of our population has had it than not had it in terms of what we know now. Not, and maybe I worded that wrong. I'm not saying that the majority of our population has had it. What I'm saying is if we look at the positive tests that we have seen across the country, there's a really good chance that a lot more of the country has had it than those numbers, obviously, because we can't test every human being on the planet. That's just impossible. And so what we know is it's been here longer than we thought. What we know is that China was not being honest about the virus. What we know is there's a laboratory in Wuhan that was being careless with some bats that they were studying. What we know is New York is the epicenter here in the States. And there's a lot of communities across this country that have not really seen an impact. What we know is they said we needed X amount of beds. And thank God we haven't needed those number of beds. We've been told, well, we need thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of ventilators. And thank God we haven't needed the number of ventilators that they estimated. And so what you have now is you have places like Texas, like Tennessee, like Georgia, like Iowa, like Colorado, like Florida, like South Carolina that are starting to open things back up. And then you have places like New York that say, yeah, maybe 2021. Then you have places like Virginia with Governor Northam, who we've talked about the governor of Virginia a number of times because of his stance on abortion. he's come out and said, hey, we can't get back to normal until a vaccine. Well, folks, vaccines take a long time, a long time. And so if that is the mindset that we're going to run with, then it's going to be 2021, possibly 2022, before we get back to any sense of normalcy. So what we've done here locally is we've had our county mayor, Glenn Jacobs, our city mayor, Ken Cannon, get together and put a plan in place to start phase one on May 1st. May 1st is this Friday. And so phase one is beginning here in Knoxville, the city, and Knox County to start to open businesses back up. Gyms are going to be able to open back up. Retail stores that had to close are going to be able to open back up. Restaurants to open back up. Now there's going to be protocols in place. There's going to be stipulations in place that they got to follow. Worship gatherings can even open back up. But again, there's stipulations that go with that. And so for many of you, you still are going to be having church online because your church just isn't going to be able to meet all of the criteria that's laid out. Some churches will continue to do drive-up church. Some churches will do outside services and meet outside, maybe under a tent or in a big field. Some churches will keep doing the social media and YouTube type services. But I do believe at the end of May, when we move on into phase two and then on into phase three, I don't think we're going to miss out on the summer. Now, what we know is some things may not come back. NBA, we may not have a finals. So if you're a sports junkie, we're probably not going to have a finals. Will Major League Baseball come back? I don't know. It'll definitely be a shortened season if that's the case. We've had some universities across the country already announce that they are planning on opening back up in the fall with residential life and everything just as normal. So if secondary institutions are doing that, you got to think primary institutions like Christian schools and public schools are going to open back up in the fall. Now, some would say, well, doesn't that mean there could be a second wave? Maybe. But if some of these numbers are accurate, there's a good chance that many of us already have herd immunity to this. But we don't know. We don't know because the data is coming out every single day. And we're trying to get a grasp of what's going on. The government, our leaders are trying to get a grasp of what's going on. Physicians are trying to get a grasp of what's going on. And so the unfortunate part with all of this is what we've seen is we've seen even the virus become political. And so I saw an article today talking about the difference between red and blue states and how they're handling COVID-19. You know, there was a reporter asked the president yesterday, now that the death toll has surpassed that of Vietnam, does he believe he should be reelected? And they're saying something to the effect of, this is this generation's Vietnam. That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous question. It's a ridiculous premise. First off, have you ever met a political official that's looked you in the eye and said, yeah, I should not be reelected? They don't exist. Second, comparing this virus to Vietnam is comparing not just apples to oranges. It's comparing two different, it's comparing pizza. It's a dumb comparison and it's an unfair one. And it's a weird question to ask. And President Trump even, I think, tweeted and was like, you know, at one point, I think this is how he answered the question. At one point, the reports in the beginning of this, they estimated, some of the models estimated up to 2 million people would die. Now, I'd never believe those models. But that's what the models say. And now when it's all said and done, they think they're going to come in around 60,000. And so if you just look at the numbers, we have flattened the curve. The deaths have not met the numbers that they anticipated. Now, there's a number of reasons for that. And so we're living in a time where we can't even deal with a pandemic without getting partisan. And that's the frustrating part. We have people in D.C. that are holding up funding. I heard another great analogy. You know, if you're thinking about the funding that has come from the government for those that have been affected by COVID-19. So whether it be the small business loans that have come out, the $350 billion that was in the initial package and the, you know, close to $400 billion in the second package, or it's the $1,200 checks that came out to citizens of this country, depending on your income. You know, some people were upset about that. But the reality is, the best illustration I can give is if somebody drove their vehicle through your living room and then you walked into your living room and you said, excuse me, sir, you just drove your truck through my living room. This is up to you to pay for it. And they just looked at you and said, yeah, sorry, that's just the way it is. And they just walked away and there was no ramifications for that. Well, that wouldn't be right. And so in the same way, the government at this time, they've kind of driven a truck through your living room and said, stop going to work, shelter in place. And so what we're seeing across the board is we're seeing businesses that are not going to make it on the other side, families that lost their job. You know, we've seen the ramifications of that. I'm not saying that it was wrong to tell people to go home. What I'm saying is you can't tell people, go home, stop working, and not provide some type of support. You just can't. We went from one of the best economies this country has ever seen to one of the worst in a manner of months. And so that's where we are. I do think we're on the other side of it. I really do. I think we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I think the president's going to be continuing to talk this week about what it looks like to reopen the country. And here's the thing, folks. We are a republic. We are the United States of America. This country is made up of a bunch of different states. And the beauty that we're seeing in this process is federalism. Is Tennessee saying, here's what needs to be done for the state of Tennessee? Is Texas saying, here's what needs to be done for the state of Texas? Colorado saying, here's what needs to be done for the state of Colorado? And the list goes on and on and on. That's how it is made to happen. That's what the founders envisioned. And that's what we're seeing played out every single day as news comes out. And I will just say, I want to give a hat tip to our governor in the state of Tennessee. I mean, he has had to deal with so much, not just the pandemic, but in the midst of the pandemic, two tornadoes, if not more, came through and caused massive damage in Nashville and Chattanooga and other places. And so he's having to deal with that. He's having to deal with normal legislation, a state budget, all of these things, while also trying to figure out what the state is going to do to answer the pandemic, while also making sure that hospitals have the beds that they need, while also making sure that ventilators are in place, while also making sure that funding is in place. All of that is happening under his watch, and I think he's done an amazing, amazing job at that. And so I wanted to start the show today to kind of give a rundown of what's been happening in the pandemic and speak specifically to that. I would simply say pray for our leaders. Regardless of what side of the aisle they fall on or you fall on, they need our prayers right now. I tuck my kids in bed at night, and my four-year-old prays. They each pray. My four-year-old's been praying as of late. We're looking forward to the virus being gone, but she also says, pray for all of those that have lost their job and need a new job. And that's a simple prayer, but it's a prayer that we must say and call out to the God of the universe to help in these times. And we're certainly grateful that even in the midst of brokenness, that he is still God and he's still good. We'll be back.
Now I'm alive and born again, rescued from the grip of sin. God, your love came crashing in and pulled me out of.
So as we continue the conversation, I hope the first segment kind of brought the COVID-19 pandemic and gave you a sense of what's been going on in my mind and heart and around, at least for local folks here in the state. But look, folks, we have to understand that whatever normal looks like when this is done, the reality is normal was always a false truth. There is no normal. In a post-Genesis 3 world that we find ourselves in, there is no normal. And so there is chaos, there's brokenness. I did a Facebook Live the other day talking about what Hope Resource Center is doing and kind of the what we've had to do during the pandemic in terms of making some changes and protocols and those type things. And one thing that I pointed out there that I think is important is even in the midst of this pandemic, life doesn't stop. And what do I mean by that? I mean that even in the midst of this pandemic, there have been people that have died of cancer. There's been people that have lost their grandparents to old age. There's been folks that have died in car wrecks. Just the other day, my wife said that a friend of hers' uncle was in a real bad accident, and they weren't sure he's going to make it. My mom the other day found a lump on her breast, and she's a breast cancer survivor. And so they did a biopsy, and thankfully, the cancer has not come back. But you see, even in the midst of all of this stuff and the pandemic news and, you know, wash your hands and wear your gloves and put your mask on and don't go out and all of these things, life doesn't stop. There's still unplanned pregnancies happening. There's still patients coming into Hope Resource Center that need help. There's still parenting classes that are going on. There's still baby showers that are coming up in the near future. All of those things are still happening. So as we think about that, there's an article over at Pregnancy Help News written by an acquaintance of mine, Kirk Walden, who is a pro-life advocate and does great work in the pro-life movement. And I thought his article was interesting as it talks about pregnancy centers and the work that can be done. And I wanted to share that with you. And so here are his words. For some pandemic reason, lately, I've had extra time to listen to podcasts. This new podcast addiction led me to a fascinating conversation on leadership between North Point Church pastor Andy Stanley and Horst Schultz, former president and chief operating officer of Ritz-Carlton. Schultz, who began his career by cleaning ashtrays, talked of the vision statement he and the Ritz-Carlton team created. Simply put, under his leadership, he wanted Ritz-Carlton to, quote, be the absolute global leader in the service industry. Now, that's a great vision. Yet, this created a follow-up thought by Stanley. Your vision was not to be the leader in the hotel industry. Now, why is that? Because Schultz believed Ritz-Carlton could expand into the airline industry, the vacation cruise industry, and more. He did not want the vision statement to limit the organization that he led. Many years ago, even before my time, passenger train companies went out of business for a simple reason. The failed companies made the mistake of thinking they were in the passenger train business instead of realizing they were in the transportation business. When passengers switched from trains to planes, they had no answers. Last week, at Heartbeat International showed us it's not in the destination. They showed us it is not in the destination conference business, but is instead in the pregnancy help empowerment business. If Heartbeat believed the only way to deliver content was through an on-site venue, we miss being in Seattle, of course, many of us would have been doing something quite different last week. But instead of tanking a gathering of perhaps 1,000 friends in Seattle, we saw 1,500 plus gather online from across the globe, chatting, smiling, sharing photos, and gaining incredible insight on the future of our organizations. Whenever circumstances change, those with a larger vision adapt. They reimagine. In short, while they may be surprised at times, they are never caught off guard. They remember the vision and ask, based on the new situation, how do we succeed? The pregnancy help community has adapted and reimagined for nearly 50 years. One salient example, in the 1980s and the early 90s, our best avenue to reach prospective patients was a free pregnancy test, better than those found in retail outlets. But if we believed then we were in the pregnancy test business, we would have been forced to shutter our doors the moment that those pregnancy tests showed up on drugstore shelves. We adapted. We now offer ultrasound, STI testing, parental care, and parenting classes, mentoring, Bible studies, educational support, job training, and so much more. The truth Though it's not yet an industry-wide mantra, we are in the hope business. Perhaps our vision should be, quote, our goal is to be the worldwide leader in hope. We understand that those who come in our door, whether they realize it, are desperately seeking hope in a challenging situation. Our vision, through various delivery methods, is to provide hope so she, and perhaps he, is empowered to choose life. Hope comes with a smile. It comes with encouragement. It comes with providing resources and solid, straight answers to tough questions. And it comes by sticking close to someone, with proper social distancing, of course, when others walk away. Whatever our list of services, wherever we serve, regardless of our budget, we are in the hope business. Let's stay in business, becoming the best at what we do. Will pregnancy help organizations one day be viewed as the worldwide leader of hope? I don't know, but it's a vision worth considering. And so as we think about that, you know, it's not lost on me that our organization is called Hope Resource Center. And so, our goal from the beginning was to provide hope to those that had none. And so in the midst of all of this that's going on, what we have found is pregnancy centers are still operating. I had a phone call today with another pregnancy center. Hey, what are y'all doing for the month of May? What's that look like for y'all? And at no point was the conversation, well, we probably should close. It was, how are we going to serve our patients? How are we going to adapt? How are we going to adjust as we look at what's in front of us? And that's what we've had to do at Hope. We've had to make adjustments, have protocols in place, screening process in place. All of these things, why? Why are we going to the extra effort to do that? Why is that? Why are we keeping up with the news of the day? Why are we keeping up with what our city and county mayor are saying? Well, we're doing that because our goal is to serve those in need. And it's the same reason why churches across this country, in just a matter of weeks, went from, for some of them, absolutely no presence online to their only presence is online. Now, why did they make the effort to adapt and to adjust and to shift? Well, they made the effort because the gospel matters. And they want to get the gospel to people. They want to worship with their family, their faith family. It's the same reason why we moved our in-person banquet on April 30th to a virtual banquet. Look, we saw the writing on the wall. We had to make a change. So we adapted. We didn't cancel. We just shifted it a little bit. And that's Thursday. If you're listening to this week, April 30th is Thursday. And we would love for you to join us at our banquet online, investinghope.com/hopelive. You can also find it on our Facebook page, Investing Hope. You can also find it on Instagram. You can find it on YouTube. We will get it to you. And we have so many great stories to share with you. But the event on Thursday night is just going to be half an hour, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. We'd love for you to join us in your living room, in your kitchen, in your car, however you want to do that. But you see, when we care enough about what we're doing, and the goal and mission is not muddied up by circumstances, then we will adjust and we will adapt to continue to meet that goal and to continue to fight for that mission. And that's what we're doing as pregnancy centers. I'm sure that's what you're doing with your church. I'm sure that's what you're doing with your business, with your family, whatever that looks like. We have all had to adjust and adapt. And it's not been said enough how great we have been in making the changes that needed to be made. The only reason the curve was flattened is because people decided to do something about it. And boy, did we. We'll talk to you on the other side.
Baptize me into your love. Oh, my spirit's overcome. Body, mind, and skin and bone. Love, I'm gonna make it known. Love, I'm gonna make it known.
Yeah, I'm coming alive with you. I'm coming alive.
People say, oh, 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 oh.
As we continue to talk today, one thing I wanted to do in this last segment is to kind of open our eyes to and give some context to where we are when it comes to the issue of life and abortion, when it comes to reporting, when it comes to the media. Last week we talked about, we talked about Rewire News and how they are seeking to change the language. When they talk about surgical abortions, they're not going to call it surgical abortions anymore. They're going to call it, I forget now what they're going to call it, but it doesn't matter what they want to call it, because the reality is, and I've said this multiple times on here, a successful abortion, the reason it's successful is because it ended the life of a human. Like, that is what a successful abortion is. Every abortion, if you want to define success, if you are a doctor, if you're taking money to provide that abortion, success means you were pregnant when you walked in and you're not pregnant when you walk out. Or for those that are taking the pill, maybe you were pregnant when you walked in, but after you took the prescribed pills, you were no longer pregnant. Well, if you go from being pregnant to not pregnant, something had to happen to the life growing inside of you. When my wife had a miscarriage, she went from being pregnant with a baby to not being pregnant. What changed? The only thing that changed was the life growing inside of her. And so when we talk about abortion, it's important to really read between the lines and see who has a bias and who doesn't. Are we getting the facts? Are we getting an agenda? And here's the thing. Look, I know that our media landscape currently is just an absolute mess. I get it. If you're watching cable news, there are very few, if any, middle-of-the-road, subjective reporters. The vast majority of them are to the left, but they claim to be subjective. Now, some are going to listen to this and go, well, there's a lot from the right as well. Of course there are. Most of the folks on the right aren't hiding that fact. They're called commentators. They're political commentators. They're conservative commentators. That is what they do. They're not hiding their politics. What irks me is when folks are trying to be reporters and they try their best to hide their politics, but their politics comes out in everything they say. And that's where we find ourselves. That's why this pandemic has been partisan. That's why it's been about politics and not about getting the community better. Because there's an agenda. And it's the same thing with abortion. So instead of just reporting facts, what you find is you find hit pieces on pregnancy centers. Oh, well, we're just being completely middle of the road. We don't have any agenda. We're just reporting the facts. Now, I'll let you know that here locally, we have local media that's what they do. I've been called multiple times to participate in an interview on local TV, and all they simply wanted to do was get both sides. And so whether it was an ultrasound bill that was coming through Nashville and the legislature was voting on it, or some other bill or some other rule having to do with abortions, I've had reporters come in my office and ask me some questions, film it all. And then when I watch the package that they put together, they have me answering questions. They have an abortion director answering questions. And I don't feel like an agenda is being pushed. They are simply letting us answer questions. So locally, we have that. And I'll be honest, for many of the folks that I've talked to locally, I have no idea where they land politically. I have no idea where they land on life and abortion. And that's what we should get out of our reporters. They should be unbiased. Even, obviously, they're going to have an opinion. But that opinion cannot continue when you're reading that teleprompter. The opinion cannot continue when you're calling yourself objective. And so as we think about that, there's a CBS reporter that doesn't really know how to do that. And so over at National Review, there's a great article talking about this. And it says The writer of the article is one that I have, Alexandra DeSantis, who is just been, she's amazing over at National Review, and I highly recommend her. Anything she writes at National Review is typically about abortion and life, and she's unapologetically pro-life, and her articles are great. And so here's what she says. She says, anyone who regularly reads my work is likely aware of my opinions about abortion. Of course. I mean, I've read her work on here multiple times. She says, in my commentary, I strive to be forthright about those views. I believe it's clear, judging from scientific evidence, that abortion intentionally kills a distinct living human being. And based on my understanding of human nature, ethics, and morality, I believe that it is always evil to intentionally kill innocent human beings. And then National Review, they say, she has the privilege at National Review of including those views in her writing. And she says, we're a commentary journal, and I'm employed in large part to share my opinion, to analyze the news rather than to report it, and to provide thoughts on subjects that interest me and our readers. I don't smuggle my beliefs into my writing, and I work for a magazine that has always been direct about its advocacy on behalf of unborn human life. Then there's Kate Smith. Smith, a correspondent at CBS News, claims to be a reporter. She's employed not by an opinion journal, but by CBS News, one of the big three broadcast television networks and a prominent mainstream journalistic outfit. You could be forgiven for believing that CBS might employ a reporter to cover abortion policy. After all, it's a topic that requires journalistic skill and nuance. It's one of the most hotly debated political issues in American public life, a question on which Americans have been harshly split for decades. It deserves reporting that reflects both this intense, deeply rooted polarization and the complexity and moral gravity of the subject. But if you believe that that's what CBS is doing in employing Smith, you'd be wrong. You see, Kate Smith is not a reporter at all. She's an advocate for abortion rights who exploits her perch at CBS to disguise as fact the opinions of the country's most radical abortion rights activists. She is Planned Parenthood's ambassador to CBS. Now think about that. She's a reporter, supposed to be unbiased, but yet she's Planned Parenthood's ambassador to CBS, posing as a reporter and constructing articles that more closely resemble press releases for the nation's most powerful abortion rights advocacy group. She has traded her objectivity for access to the organizations, offering them the kid glove treatment so they will permit her to be the first to publicize their PR campaigns, interview their leaders, and scoop their briefs in court cases. Let's review Smith's most recent work, starting with her verbal vitrocity. She tends to hide her liberal beliefs about abortion in devious language, referring to herself, for instance, as a reporter covering abortion access, a euphemism wielded exclusively by the most vigorous activists for unlimited legal abortion. Earlier this month, she was the first to report that a coalition of abortion rights groups had responded to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, ruling in favor of Texas's COVID-19 abortion restrictions. Her article noted that Texas was restricting abortion access and exclusively quoted pro-abortion activists, one from the Center for Reproductive Rights and one from NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. When Alexis McGill Johnson became acting president at Planned Parenthood last summer, her first public interview went to who else? Kate Smith, who opened their conversation with a broad smile and a hearty congratulations on the new job. Smith went on to pose such probing questions as, quote, how did you first get involved with Planned Parenthood? And there are a lot of different ways that you can get involved with healthcare access, especially for women of color and especially low-income women. Why Planned Parenthood? End quote. It is hard to imagine how the interview would have gone any differently had it been a PR video crafted by Planned Parenthood itself to give its supporters a polished inside look at the glamour and gloss of the nation's largest abortion provider. More recently, Smith offered the same treatment in an exclusive, uncritical interview with Nancy Northup, president of the Center for Reproductive Rights, providing her with a platform to expound on her organization's lawsuit against states that are attempting to limit unnecessary procedures, including elective abortion, during the coronavirus outbreak. Now, I could go on and on. I'm not going to read the whole article. But it's not just Kate Smith with CBS. If you've been paying attention the last few years, it is every major news organization that had Cecile Richards when she was president of Planned Parenthood, that had other abortion proponents on their morning shows and their evening shows and their midday shows, late night shows. You see, they've glamorized abortion. And they won't be honest with you with what abortion is. When they go on the morning show, they're not describing what abortion is. When they go on that late night show with a comedian, they're not saying, you know, that a successful abortion ends the life of a unique individual. They're not saying that. Now, why are they not saying that? Because that would make people uncomfortable. Now, why would that make people uncomfortable? Because it would be exposing the truth of what abortion is, that it in fact ends a life like yours, a life like mine, a life like my children. You see, so this is why this matters. So if you're just perusing the news, whether it be in print or on TV or on radio, and you're expecting unbiased reporting, but in reality you're getting a PR campaign from the largest abortion provider in the country, an abortion provider, mind you, that receives millions, hundreds of millions of dollars from our government, well, that's not being honest. Why are these organizations, why are these news media outlets not interviewing the president of Heartbeat International, president of CareNet, about the work of pregnancy centers during this pandemic? Why are we not seeing more interviews like that of folks that are handing out diapers, wipes, and formula to these families that are in need? Of folks that are providing free pregnancy tests and ultrasounds and STD testing and treatment during this pandemic when no one else will? Those are the stories that we need to be celebrating and highlighting. And guess what, folks? We're going to do that here every single week. And we're thankful for that opportunity. We'll be back. God of mercy, send me love of mine. Now I have surrendered to your design. May this offering stretch across the sky. These hallelujahs be multiplied. I love Need to Breathe. They're so good, and I don't want to say much on here, but I will say we need more Need to Breathe. We don't need y'all to stop, okay? Just throwing that out there, and if I have to bring Josh Loveless on this show again to make sure that doesn't happen, I will do what I have to do. But we need to Breathe. We need y'all together. We don't need you, you know, I get it. You got other itches and other creativity things that you want to do, creative things that you want to do, but you can do all of those things and still be Need to Breathe and bring us that music. We would be appreciative. I know I would, and the Wood family, at least, would be very appreciative of that. Hopefully today's show has been fruitful and helpful to you as we looked at a number of different things when it comes to the pandemic, when it comes to pregnancy centers operating, and, of course, just being aware that there are some that claim to be reporters, unbiased reporters that are certainly not unbiased. And so it's important that we are ready for these conversations, that we're ready to have these conversations calmly. We don't have to be hateful in our rhetoric, but we don't want to water it down either. And that's important. You can be forceful and uplifting and energetic and intense even at times if need be. And the reason why we're going to be those things is because we know that when folks are fighting for abortion rights during a pandemic, and out of the same mouth they are saying that we need to shut the country down, even if it saves one life, it is worth shutting the country down. But then they say abortions are essential. Well, that doesn't make sense at all. None. So that's why at times I get intense. That's why at times I get frustrated, because it's silliness. Even had one politician come out the other day and say that abortion saves lives. Whose life? I believe that was the governor of Michigan, who through this whole mess of the pandemic is seeing just how far lefts she can go. And so the reason why we pay attention to these things is because they can change the terminology. They can write up whatever they want. They can attack pregnancy centers. They can do all of these things. But none of that changes the fact that abortion ends a life. None of it. And so that's why we have to pay attention. That's why we have to continue these conversations. And that's why Hope Resource Center is going to continue to operate. That's why we open today. That's why we'll be open tomorrow. Continue to serve. That's why we would love for you to join us on April 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at investinghope.com/hopelive, or at our Facebook page, or at our YouTube page, or at our Instagram page. We would love for you to join us so that you could hear the stories, so that you could see what your partnership has done over the last year. It's just half an hour. That's all. That's all I ask of you. You can go to our Facebook page now, and you can see links, and you can share and let people know. You can host a watch party. We'd love for you to do that over on Facebook or YouTube. Have people watch it with you either at your home, or they can watch it with you virtually online. But man, I hope there are thousands and thousands of people sitting in their living rooms this Thursday night at 8 p.m. on April 30th. Watching as we tell the story of hope. As you hear from our staff about a number of different patients and the services we were able to provide for them. As you hear from a former patient who chose adoption. And as you not just hear from her, but you also hear from those that adopted her baby. It's an amazing story. And then you'll get to, maybe you are just a listener to Joy 620 or to the podcast, and you've never seen me. Well, it's a great opportunity for you to see that I do, in fact, have red hair. And I think that's important. And you'll get to see that on Thursday night as well. Beardless. There is no beard in the video. And so just a redheaded dude. And my talk in the midst of the whole thing is going to be less than anybody's. And so I really do hope that you tune in. April 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Again, investinghope.com/hopelive. We would love for you to join us virtually for our fundraising banquet. It's going to be a great night. If you can't make it, if you can't watch it, don't worry, because we're going to archive it right there on our website, and you can watch it after the fact. And even if that, if you don't want to do either, you just want to donate and partner with us, you can do that at investinghope.com, and we'd love for that to happen. We'll talk to you next week.